And now, John Gambling with the mayor of the greatest city in the world, Michael Bloomberg. Sponsored by the Heart Institute of Staten Island. Don't let your heart skip a beat.
And here we are, yes indeed, back together again on a Friday edition of the John Gambling Show with Mayor Michael Bloomberg. Good morning, sir.
You have the whole city government here.
We do,
indeed. Quinn representing the other half of the City Hall and the mayor representing his half. Neither of us have anything to say in our respective halves, I might point out.
Exactly. So, Speaker of the City Council, Christine Quinn, good morning.
Thanks for having me.
Good to see you, as always. What is the occasion that
we have a number
this?
Of things, but the most important thing, I think, is that through the leadership of the Speaker, the City Council is going to pass a law, which we supported and will certainly sign, that will help us collect water fees. You pay for your water in New York City, from the deadbeats who haven't been doing it. If you take a look, if you live in the city, one quarter of your water bill is because others aren't paying. And the reason they're not paying is there's never been any penalty. If you don't pay your property taxes, we put a lien on your property, and so people pay their property taxes. Probably 95% of the people pay their property taxes. Water fees, only about 80% of the people pay because we've never turned anybody off and we can't put liens against them. Up until now, but thanks
what's
to gonna, Christine.
What's going to happen now, Christine?
Well, we're going to pass legislation that will give the city the power to put these liens and sell the water liens. And we've also done it in a way that is working with our Department of Environmental Protection. They've taken huge step forwards to improve their billing, to make sure people are getting accurate bills. And what will happen now, we might have had to raise water rates 18%.
Yeah, that's what I was reading.
Yeah. Which meant everybody in the city of New York was going to subsidize deadbeats, which is the wrong thing to do. So now we've prevented that, the council and the mayor.
No 18% increase.
No 18% increase. The rate will be frozen. We'll be aggressively, though, want to be clear with people who are listening. If you haven't paid your water bill, you should pay soon. Because we're going to come and we're going to get it.
The way this works is for small one-family houses, no liens,
right.
But we can turn off your water. And for two or more family buildings and houses, we can put a lien on, and we sell the liens. Now, the two key things here.
What I heard, Chris,
selling the liens. Well, the city's not very good at going out and collecting money. So if you sell the lien to somebody, private companies are very good at it. We've been doing it in the private property tax world forever. So that's going to make that work.
It's like a bill collector.
Right. And
exactly.
The reason. Exactly right. And the reason for the difference in the single-family homes is single-family homes are different than two or more, because in two or more, the owner may not live there. So
right.
The person responsible for paying isn't the person who suffers when the water is turned off, whereas single-family home, virtually everybody that owns a single-family home lives in it. So you're turning off the water in the deadbeat's own house, and you'd be surprised. When we walk up and say, start painting the sidewalk as to where we're going to dig it up, people rush to the
checkbook.
Absolutely.
Now, you know what? I just want to say, listeners should also know, we were also setting up as part of this water lien sale an ombudsman office within the Department of Environmental Protection. So if people have questions, concerns, fears,
issues,
there's now somebody they can call 311. We'll hook you up with the ombudsman's office, and we'll help deal with anybody who may have a legitimate reason why they didn't pay, though that's really a minority.
If you don't pay your property tax bills because you think it's wrong, the bottom line is you pay and then you go and fight
right.
it. That's just the way it's always worked. This shouldn't be any different. And we are involved in a program to put meters on everybody's house so you'll be much more accurate. Right now it's based on the frontage on the street. And the meters will automatically report to the New York City wireless network, which we're very close to implementing. So it'll be very efficient and all of that stuff. The other thing I want to mention is Christine's really, and the city council, been very helpful in getting money for pre-kindergarten called pre-K. And we have both half and full day slots available. Everybody agrees that universal pre-K is a great idea, but parents have to go and take advantage of all the good work that Christine and the state legislature have done to get us.
Are you telling me that they aren't being filled?
Some slots are still open, and we really need New Yorkers to call 311 if you have a four-year-old. Call 311. We will get your child into a pre-K slot. Some half-day, some full-day, but we really need people to do it by the end of the year, because the last thing we want is these slots to stay open when we really are a tremendous educational opportunity for kids. If they get into pre-K, children have a much better possibility of doing extraordinarily well in elementary school.
The natural segue from water liens
To child care.
To child care. Two, you know where I'm going with this? I know you know.
Let's see. It's not the summertime, so you're not looking for
lifeguards. No, it's two things for security in this city, which is another thing that you really worry about. One is a new program called Notify NYC. It's a pilot program in four little areas. You sign up. We have your cell phone number on a computer.
Yeah.
And if there's if there's an emergency, we will send you a text message. Now, when this is all, if it really works and the whole city is on, you still have to sign up because if we don't have your number in our database and you have to give it to us, you can't get it. But you'd get notified for the whole city because the problem, somebody will say, well, I live on Staten Island. I signed up there, but now I'm downtown. I won't get it. Well, that won't be a problem once the whole city does it. So that's one thing. Notify NYC, and we're doing it in four different places: Lower Manhattan, the Rockaways,
and basically, Staten what you give them is your cell phone number, your email address.
Is this cell phone number? We send you a text message. That's all
it's
you need.
It's the best, most efficient way to do it.
Yeah. So the other thing is that's for to notify people about future emergencies. If you go back, past emergency was 9/11, a great tragedy in this city, and we are trying to track what happens to people's health. And here it is 6 years later. So we have great data on police and fire and, you know, and other emergency workers, sanitation, corrections, that sort of thing. But for the general public that lived there, we want them to call 311 and sign up for an interview. And we want to get some medical history from you, which will protect your personal information, but so that we can track and see whether or not you come down with something. After all, if we're going to be able to help people, right, we have to have real information.
This would apply to people that aren't sick.
Yes.
Absolutely.
I mean, yeah, the people that were just there.
They're more likely to tell us if they're sick and to seek treatment. You don't know what's going on in your body. Maybe nothing. Let's hope that's the case. But if it isn't, we want to be able to see. See, fire department, we've always used, they get physicals every year. And so we have very good data on their lung capacity and heart attack rate and pulse and all that sort of stuff, blood chemistry. Every single year, you have a history. So we've been using them as the bogey. But we need to know about other people, and then we can keep them posted and remind them to see their doctors. And if we discover something, tell them to get a checkup, or if there's a preventive thing, send it to them.
All right. I need to go to a break here before we say goodbye to Christine. A question on the water. One more question. Is there an amount of delinquency that will trigger some of this, or is it any month's water bill that hasn't been paid?
Well, you know, I think we...
Or are you going to play that by case by case?
Yeah, we're going to leave that. That type of a question is really something you should leave to the agency to figure out. We don't need to micromanage something like that in legislation. The Department of Environmental Protection, Emily Lloyd's a terrific commissioner. She'll figure out
thing. So if you owe money for your water, watch out.
Right.
Same thing. Pay your bills.
You know, a day late, we're not going to come hunt you down. Don't get me wrong. But Emily will figure out the right point at which there's a trigger. We recognize, you know, sometimes people might be a little bit late here and there. But we're not talking about that. We're talking about deadbeats who have basically been stealing services.
I got you. Very good. Good to see you, as always.
Thank you.
Always a pleasure. Mr. Mayor, hang on. We're coming right back at 77 WABC. We continue. Mayor Michael Bloomberg, John Gambling, and another guest this morning. Busy, busy morning. We've got Ariel Zwang. She's Executive Director of New York Cares. Hello, Ariel.
Hi.
Good morning. Welcome to the John Gambling Show with the mayor. And you are here. It's wintertime. It's appropriately cold outside, and you're looking for coats.
That's right. The 19th annual New York Cares Coat Drive kicked off this week, and we're hoping to collect more than 80,000 coats this winter to give to people in New York who need a warmer winter.
Well, that's great.
You know, what happens is the homeless, they have coats. The summer comes. They don't have any place to store this stuff. And, of course, so it gets cold, and you have this recurring problem. Be great if we didn't have homeless. That's what you really want to focus on. But in the meantime, you know, you could freeze, you die,
and a lot of people,
nothing good comes out of being cold.
For most of us, we've got a number of coats hanging in a closet somewhere, many of them we never even use. How do people donate, and where do people donate?
There are hundreds of locations throughout the city where people can donate their coat throughout the month of December. First of all, 24 hours a day at every New York Police Department precinct.
Just run into your precinct and they'll take them happily.
24 hours a day, they'll be glad to take them. In the morning from 7:30 to 9:30 at the major transit hubs, Penn Station, Grand Central Station, and the Port Authority. And then there are literally hundreds of other locations throughout the city, and you can find them on our website, www.nycares. That's NYCARES.org. You can search by zip code and find something near you.
And, Mr. Mayor, does 311 work on this one as well?
You can rest assured.
I noticed downstairs in this building that they have, they have a sign for New York.
Yeah, and we have it at City Hall right down there. As I walk into the office every day, there's just a couple boxes.
How do you go about distributing them? I mean, giving them out to people who need them?
Well, we have donated warehouse space where all the coats come, and there are mountains and mountains of coats. Believe it or not, it takes 1,000 volunteers during the month of December to sort them into men's, women's, children's, infants.
Sizes.
Right. And then different social service agencies, about 300 of them, start picking up the coats a few days after they begin being donated. So really, within a few days of donating your coat, it's gone to an agency that serves the homeless, serves seniors on a fixed income, families who need a little extra help to get by in the wintertime, and it's being worn by someone who needs it.
What does New York Cares do the rest of the year?
Well, thank you for asking. What we do 365 days a year is make it possible for New Yorkers to volunteer their time for causes and people that need it the most. Last year, 36,000 people volunteered with New York Cares.
You know, Ariel, with all the work, just to come back to the coats, in 05, I remember being there, they distributed their millionth coat. Million coats, a lot of coats.
That is a lot of coats.
That's a coat for every one out of 12.5% of the people in the city, one out of every eight.
You said 36,000 donated their time last year. Do you need more?
Is
there room for more?
Definitely. You know, we live in a city where people have very big hearts, and anyone who would like to help, we very, very much welcome your help. And there's as many ways to get involved and volunteer as you can imagine, and it's scheduled conveniently so that people can do it around the other busy things that they have to do.
Well, I'm sure if you walk the halls here at WABC, there'll be a few coats hanging around. Help yourself. I'm sure you will.
Try and take the ones people don't need anymore.
Ariel, great to see you. Good luck. And again, the website?
www.nycares, that's NYCARES.org.
Good deal. I hope you get
a lot
of coats as a result of this appearance. Good luck to you, and Merry Christmas to you as well. Mr. Mayor, you are off traveling to the Far East.
Tomorrow morning. Leaving tomorrow morning and getting Sunday night to Beijing, China. A couple days there, a couple days in Shanghai. Overnight flight to Bali, which is in Indonesia. Pretty far south, and then back.
Yeah, in Bali, they're holding that climate conference.
As a climate conference, it's sort of the successor to the Kyoto conference, and what I want to talk about is urging them to include cities in their discussions, because in the end, if you think about it, people in big cities around the world are the ones that suffer the most from pollution just because of the concentration, and mayors, have been saying this for a long time, are the ones that are really on the ground where the rubber meets the road dealing with pollution. One thing is to worry about long-term global warming trends, but much more important to mayors is the fact that our people, you and me, are breathing the air in this city, and that's true all around the world. So in New York, we have locations where kids go to the hospitals with asthma rates at four times the national average. So, yes, I want to do something about global warming. It's not worth having the argument about that. I've got a problem, you and I, and the air we breathe and our kids, right now. And so that's what I want to talk about.
Who will you be addressing? Are you going to have a keynote speech?
Yeah, keynote. They have lots of speakers. It lasts 2 weeks. I know John Kerry's going to be there. Al Gore's going to be there. I think Bill Clinton's going to be there. I'm not sure. I'm going to do an event with Bill Clinton up in the Bronx right after the radio show. I have to duck out early to go do that. But it's all the countries have come. And you know, you sit and you say, well, this government, whether it's ours or China's or India, doesn't want to sign on. But in America, there's 700 cities, virtually every big city, that has signed on, almost every big city, that signed on and said, whether the federal government is going to do it or not, we in our cities are going to try to make the air cleaner and get carbon emissions down because you and I are breathing it.
How do you view those that I'll use this as the example, but there are many others, that said that this climate conference, 10,000 people, create so much pollution in and of itself?
Well, you know, that's cute, but the bottom line is unless you get
that's
together, you're never going
to
do something. I mean, that's just a journalist having a little fun or one that's not very smart and really thinking about it. Given the amount of – that's like saying you shouldn't pay for, a safety measure because it would be you're wasting the same money in the same ways that the guy that's going to shoot you is. This is not a great analogy, but you get the idea. You have to get people together, and they're going to fly. And the issue is not a handful of small things. The issue is the big polluters are ships at sea. You don't think about that. Ships at sea generate an enormous percentage of the pollution in the world. There's a
Are you talking about water pollution or air pollution?
They belch stuff into the air.
The diesels that they run?
Absolutely, with no attempt to do it cleanly. That was something that we could do internationally. We could work on that problem without ending world commerce, without getting involved in a he said, she said, without arguing about the science, without saying I'm not going to do it until the other guy does it. We could do something about that. You can plant trees, stop deforesting areas.
What about jets? You know, they want to tax people's travel by jets to supposedly reduce.
Well, you know, I'm not opposed to using capitalism to dissuade people from doing it. I gave a speech arguing that we should tax those that put pollutants into the air. The big coal-fired plants are the worst, and that would give them an incentive to invest in technology that reduces the pollution. Now, you can say, well, I don't want – I own a coal mine, or I own a power plant that uses coal, and I don't want to pay for that. You may not want to, but we have a history in this world and certainly in this country. We have rules about what you can sell. If it's damaging the public, we don't allow you to do that. And, you know, you put asbestos into the air in your building, we don't allow you to occupy the building. They're doing that for everybody.
Are you in favor of cap and trade where you buy credits? I think that's silly.
I think it's a, I've said repeatedly, I don't think that's a good idea. I think it is, the reason people like cap and trade is they say, well, it's not going to work very well because there's too many exemptions and too many ways to get around it. But I'll be able to do something, but nobody's going to notice the cost. If you want to cut pollution, you have what they don't ever want to say because they never use the TAX word, but it's a carbon tax. That's what you want to do if you want to cut pollution. You can make the case that we shouldn't cut pollution and we'll destroy the planet or not destroy the planet or we'll breathe bad air or not breathe bad air, whatever you want. But if you want to reduce pollution, you have to give an economic incentive to not pollute, and it's got to be one that goes after those that do the pollution. A lot of the cap-and-trade stuff, it's feel-good stuff. The way cap-and-trade fundamentally works is I'm polluting, so I pay somebody else to stop their pollution, and then I don't have to pollute. I can continue to pollute. Well, number one, they're polluting in my neighborhood where I live, thank you very much, so I don't want to breathe the air. The fact that you may, in fact, be reducing pollution on the other side of the world doesn't do me a lot of short-term good. Long-term, it may be okay. Number two, a lot of the stuff is total bull. The other side of the world, they don't reduce pollution. Let's get serious here.
Will you be talking about that in China when you are there?
I'm going to certainly mention the environment. China has an enormous environmental problem. They recognize that. They are worried about it for the Olympics. And I think in the end, China and India will change. People say, I'm not going to do anything until China and India change. China and India will change when the public there understands that it's a problem and that their health is being impacted and that they will convince their government to do it. You know, one of the things my foundation works on is smoking cessation. And the Chinese government's actually been somewhat helpful lately in distributing information about the dangers of smoke and secondhand smoke. And that's really quite unique in China because they own the government owns the cigarette companies. So they're hurting their own economics, but they understand that they're hurting their people. This century, 1 billion people will die from smoking-related diseases. Just think about that. And 50% of the smoking is in five countries, Russia, China, India, Bangladesh, and Indonesia. And so if you really want to save lives, start smoking cessation programs.
All right. We'll have a couple more minutes with Mayor Michael Bloomberg here. On the half hour, though, let's take a fast break. George Weber's got a news update. We'll check Wall Street. Come right back. WABC. We have a couple of more minutes with Mayor Michael Bloomberg this morning. You are headed up to an event with former President Clinton.
I grew up in a world where I didn't know presidents. I mean, I'm still a little bit impressed when you meet a president, aren't
Absolutely.
You?
Absolutely, of course.
Yeah, whether you agree with him or not. And Bill Clinton, he's actually a very charming guy, as is our current president. Both, you know, whether you agree with their politics or not, you don't get to be president, I don't think, without being good with people, and both certainly are. We're going to do a sustainability announcement up in the Bronx, and we're going to have Secretary Alfonso Jackson. He's the Secretary of the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, and Tino Hernandez, our Chairman of New York City Housing Authority, and the borough president, Adolfo Carrion, and some union people and representatives. It is an enormous group of people, and they will speak. Everything will be said, and what's more, everything will be said by everyone. That is one of the requirements
like, that
here.
That sounds like something that Yogi Berra would have said. But
No, but I'll tell you something. You know, you say Yogi Berra. I have a theory that one person wrote everything that Dorothy Parker, Mae West, Mark Twain, Yogi Berra, all these clever things. And I really, I don't know who does it, but they got to Fats Domino. Fats Domino was here about a month and a half ago. I gave him a key to the city, and it was in front of a group that I think nobody in the audience was alive when he did Blueberry Hill, but it was from my generation. He couldn't be a nicer guy. He comes from New Orleans. From the lower ninth, his whole house was wiped out and that sort of thing. Anyways, I gave him a key to the city, and I said, Fats, how long are you going to stay here in New York? And to show you how smart Fats is, he said, until I leave.
Very good. There you go.
I always like that.
Why get too specific? Just keep the door wide open. What did you make of the Romney speech yesterday on his religion?
I didn't hear it, but I think your religion is a private thing. It seems to me that this working him over his religion is what we did with the JFK, if you remember. Most people are too young to remember, but there were stories. Oh, the Pope would tell him what to do, and he would do that. There was a tunnel from Washington to the Vatican you could run through in the middle of the night. I mean, come on. You and your relationship to God and how you – or whether you practice and how you practice and what you believe – but whether you believe or not, that's a very personal thing. And if you really care about religion, you should want strict separation of church and state, because someday the state might pick a religion that you don't agree with. So we're all very much protected by the tradition in this country of leaving the state and the and religion separate. And I think in this case, there are reasons to like George Romney, reasons, I suppose, to disagree with him. Those are the reasons that you should – those are things you should look at when you decide about not his religion.
I couldn't agree with you more. We're going to talk more about that in the next hour here. You're losing one of your best guys, Dan Doctoroff.
Dan Doctoroff has done – I've said this a thousand times – done more to change the city for the next two or three decades than anybody maybe in the past. People compare him to Robert Moses. I certainly do. Moses had it easy because Moses could send in the bulldozers. Dan has to work with courts and community boards and legislatures in a ways that Robert Moses didn't. I'm not knocking what Robert Moses did, but I think it's a much tougher environment today to get big things done. Dan has got an enormous number of rezonings and projects going, some of which are underway, some of which are finished. We will miss him. People focus on, well, he didn't get the stadium, he didn't get the Olympics. That's true, but at least he tried. And I find it fascinating, these people that say, oh, he's failed in these two things. What the hell were they doing at the time? This is a guy who he's been working for a dollar a year for 6 years, putting up with, you know, you go and testify before a bunch of angry legislators. You go and face the press when they write unfair things. It's not easy. And Dan has this vision and this desire to help the city, and he's done a spectacular job. When I first hired him, the deal was he would work for a dollar a year and stay for 4 years. And then as the 4 years were finishing up, I said, look, can you stay for longer? And we agreed that he would stay for two more years, which runs out the end of this month, because that would get a number of big projects going. And Plan YC and a lot of these things that we're working on have come after in our second term in that last 2 years that he committed to. So, you know, I made a deal with him, and he would do that. And then when I did try to convince him not to, and then when I was lost that battle and he wasn't going to do it, he made a very fortuitous or lucky for us trip to Korea to give a speech with Peter Grauer, the guy that runs Bloomberg. And Grauer said to me afterwards when we were together playing golf or something, he said, you know, this guy was – I said, how'd the speech go? Great. He said, Dan is, you know, so smart. And I said, you're telling me. The guy's been – for 6 years has sat, you know, 10 feet away. I've never seen anybody that can attract good people and get creativity right from everybody and pull people together and get agencies to work together. He really is the best manager I've ever met. And so I started thinking about it, and I called the Conflict of Interest Board and said, any problems with me, you know, asking him would he be interested in Bloomberg? And they said no, as long as you don't make an agreement with him. And so I, you know, sat and talked to him about the company a little bit, which he knew because, you know, we sit next to each other. And he said, yeah, I'd be interested. So I called Grauer and I said, you know, you should go talk to this guy. You know him because he's great. And as the majority stockholder, I certainly wouldn't have any objections if you brought him in. And the chairman of the board, Peter Grauer, brought him in as president of the company. So he's under Peter, who will certainly stay for a long time, I hope, and be chairman of the management committee. And there are four people, one of the founders of the company, Tom Secunder, and our CEO, Lex Fenech, and Beth Mazzeo, who runs all our data collection, very big part of our business, and Matt Winkler, who's the genius behind our news operation. And that's really the management committee. And Hugh Lowenstein, an old friend of mine, is also on the management committee, I think, and he made a deal with him, and so Dan's going to go to work there. We will miss him. I'd love to see if there was a ways for him to stay on some of these commissions, because, you know, if people say, oh, it's a conflict. Conflict? This city needs good people.
Speaking of which, who's going to replace him?
Nat Leventhal, who was a deputy mayor, first deputy mayor under Ed Koch, is conducting a search. There's some, you know, you only have 2 years, so you have to have somebody who can hit the ground running, who's free to do it now. Somebody says, well, it'll take me 6 months to get out of where I am. I'd love to do it. We don't have that luxury. Or I don't know the people. I've got to get up to speed. We don't have that luxury. I want to keep this going. My hope is that Dan, most of the team that Dan created and attracted
and
will hang around, sure, for the next 2 years. This guy and what he does really had a very big impact on the city. And I'm sad that he's leaving. The city is the worse for it. You know, we've just got to find ways to attract this caliber of person to government. And people say, oh, well, you know, that's fine, but we don't want anybody with any conflicts. I'll never forget when he was hired, somebody criticized him because he had friends. All of the big developers were his friends. And I said, yeah, that's one of the reasons I hired him. You want somebody that knows the business and can negotiate. To send somebody out to negotiate for this city that doesn't know the business is one of the dumber things you could possibly
send them out to slaughter.
Do. Absolutely. And they do that. Government does that, not just New York. Every place does that all the time. So, you know, you have to have honest people. The fact that they have been in that business and have lots of contacts is the plus. You just have to be honest when you're doing it.
Congestion pricing, real fast. Talk about shrinking the size.
Number of things being discussed. We've got to get something done. Mark Shaw is running this panel, and nothing's been decided. Everything's up in the air, and we've promised Shelley Silver a report. I think it's either March 1st or March 30th, whatever.
Somewhere in there.
Yeah, somewhere in there. And then we'll take it from there. We need a ways to raise money to build out mass transit to areas of the city that doesn't have it and make it more attractive in terms of speed and comfort and reliability. And at the same time, we need some incentive to reduce cars and in trucks in the city so that we can clean up the air. And congestion pricing does that. If somebody's got a better idea that does both, that's fine. But remember, we've got $354 million sitting there from the federal government that if we don't do this plan or something very similar that accomplishes the same thing, we'll walk away from $354 million. I hope not.
I hope not, too. I saw you drop the flag on the number 7 extension this week.
Biggest thing the city's done in mass transit for a long time. We'll open up the whole west side. For decades, you'll see construction over there.
All right, Mr. Mayor, I know you've got an appointment, and you've got an appointment overseas, so we will not see you next Friday.
Not see you next Friday.
And we'll see you in a couple of weeks.
2 weeks. Looking forward to it.
Safe travel.
All the best.
Mayor Michael Bloomberg this morning here at 77 WABC. Let me take a break. Coming right back.